Phil, there are so many great television shows and movies.
That's right. Thank goodness Resonance Rewind has the team to analyze them on a personal basis with Robin Pierce, Jenny Bill, Jessica Burtis, Alex Lefchuk, and some key additional guests from the Temporal Nexus.
Aren't you one of those key additional guests?
No, I'm the Temporal Nexus.
August the 19th, 1980, to the 21st of March, 3085. Two significant dates in the escape from tomorrow. It's time for another Resonance Rewind. I don't know. I just don't know which way he's going to go. It could be that he was so impressed with Assignment Earth, no he wasn't, that Art Wallace's connection with respect to that Star Trek episode which he wrote could tip the balance in terms of Robin Pierce's thoughts on this particular one. It may be because obviously Rod Serling was intimately connected with this series, who actually were also going to parachute in Gene Roddenberry to try and rescue them because of their appalling ratings after 14 shows in the States. I don't know, but we'll just wait and see, because it is, of course, another edition of Resonance Rewind, and we've already got a triplet of tremendous folk with us in the offing. That's Jenny Bill, of course. How are you, Jenny?
Fine, thank you very much. Bit hot, but otherwise fine.
Trio, triplet, it's all the muchness, really. And of course, from New York, with a slightly sore throat because she's been a bit poorly, but she's always ready for Resonance Rewind, Pamela Sue Mann. How are you, Pamela?
I'm good.
Good. That's what we'd like to hear. Excellent. And so we turn to, obviously, the opening descriptor for Escape from Tomorrow, all the way from the year 3085. It's Robin Pierce. Robin, share with us this opening descriptor, please.
I will indeed. Just to give a brief background, between 1968 and 1973, the Apes saga, comprising five films, episodic in nature, they went full circle right to the beginning, was Fox's biggest sci-fi franchise up until 1977, when Star Wars took over. But in 1974, a year after the end of the Apes films, they figured there was still some popularity to be wrung out of the franchise, and they, rather ill-advisedly as it turned out, commissioned a television series, which only ran 14 episodes and was cancelled mid-season due to failing ratings. Okay, so that's the background. Now, this episode is a very slimmed down and simplified reworking of the first film from 1968 with a completely different cast, bar Roddy McDowall. And a lot of the plot nuances are missing. But essentially, from the back of the DVD box set, this is what we have. After their spacecraft travels through a time warp, two astronauts, played by Ron Harper and James Norton, from 1981 crash land back on Earth in the year 3085, a time when intelligent apes rule and humans have been reduced to servants or pets. Captured by the apes and sentenced to death, they are saved by a curious chimpanzee named Galen, played by Roddy McDowall. But now all three are on the run, trying to keep one step ahead of the guerrilla army, led by General Urko, Mark Lynard, who is determined to kill the renegades. And of course, missing from this descriptor is also the devious and intellectual Dr. Zaius, played by Booth Coleman, who is trying to suppress the truth about evolution at all costs.
Well, no bones broken, I checked, as of course Alan Verdon said to Pete Burke, the first, I suppose, in a whole series of double acts that also led on to Starsky and Hutch, which was slightly longer running in terms of double acts and buddy movies, etc. But let's find out what the rest of the team make of Escape from Tomorrow, starting off with our younger contributor, of course, from, of course, Country in the Kitchen, the podcast, and a whole heap of other delightful things. It's Tessa Snart. Tessa, where did you put this on your experiential base of life, the universe, and so on?
Yeah, so I really enjoyed this one. I actually watched it about an hour and a half ago with my dad over dinner. He used to watch the series when he was younger. He said he was about 13, I think, when it first came out. But yeah, really enjoyed it. It was kind of like a reverse world, wasn't it, where the apes ruled and we were kind of caged and seen as the bad humans. It kind of reminded me of Cowboys and Indians a little bit as well, because of where it was set and all of that. But really interesting. And of course, in its day, to have kind of forwarded to that time, we are having those issues with the planet. We are kind of destroying the planet. So there is a message there as well, I think, you know, which still goes on today, even more so. So, yeah, I think it was entertaining, but also hard hitting as well. And very interesting. And the costumes, I don't know about the costumes. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Star Wars. I don't know why, what the kind of the apes wore. But yeah, all in all, I enjoyed it.
This is an infection, Zaius. One doesn't question, one wipes it out, as Mark Leonard obviously said in his character of General Urko, which, of course, would echo his incarnation of Spock's father, Sarek. So Mark Leonard certainly being very connected in that line of things. Well, allowing for infections, allowing for different realities and so on, we don't know whether Jessica's back in North Carolina, or Jessica, are you closer to the British Isles? Are you still in Ireland?
Yeah, I am still in Ireland at the moment. So sunny and hot here. So I feel like I'm back in North Carolina.
So did you manage to see Escape from Tomorrow, and what was your experience of this experience of the ape saga?
I did, and I think kind of similar to what Tessa was saying, my mom was talking about how she watched this as a little girl, and she was so excited to hear that this was on our roster of things to watch. I actually enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. I hate the movies for some reason, but I think it is because of that like visceral reaction. I think it's very interesting how, like, I know this series plays into the idea of humans kind of being subservient to another species, because I think a lot of the times in like sci-fi, that's an alien species that comes to Earth or we go somewhere else. So kind of seeing it where it's an animal that we know and that we can kind of like, we feel like we know and have some kind of control over. I think it creeps me out a lot to see this dynamic, but I think that's the point. So, but yeah, I think that's why it unnerves me. But I actually really enjoyed it. It was super entertaining and creepy, but I thought it was really good. I really like it more than the movies.
Interesting. The movies that you've seen, are they the recent movies, or are they the original movie with Charlton Heston and Roddy McDowall?
You know, that's a great question, because I feel like I've seen like several, and one had like Helena Bonham Carter in it, and then like
the reimagining by Tim Burton, a classic of its kind, but a different sort of, a different sort of aspect. But you're certainly right, that was a reimagining. Then of course we had three recent ones, which were called War of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which were primarily prequels, which suggested how that flu-like virus or actual cure for Alzheimer's actually kind of created the evolutionary split, which of course Pierre Boulle first wrote about in Monkey Planet and then led to the series. So I think this particular pitch comes pretty much after five of the original movies that Robin of course referred to, both Planet of the Apes, Beneath the Planet of the Apes, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, and then of course Conquest of the Planet of the Apes and Battle for the Planet of the Apes. Lots of apes there. Pamela Sue Mann, what are your thoughts on this particular episode?
First, I must say economy of words, because I'm not sure if my voice is going to cooperate with my brain. I agree with what Tessa and Jessica said. At first, when I saw Planet of the Apes, I really did go, ugh, no, because I remember from my childhood, first off, I didn't like Roddy McDowall. He was in Land of the Lost, and that creeped me out. And it just, he creeped me out. I'm sorry. But actually, interestingly enough, Galen, I didn't even realize when I watched it last night that Galen was actually Roddy McDowall, because I loved his character. Just even his little facial expressions, he'd make those little wrinkles with his face, and he seemed to be so caring. So, you know, all of the commentary aside of what was going on and how the actors were acting and the creepiness of the apes, like Tessa said, you know, it really did make me think of the fact that we are actually in real time destroying our planet. And in this imagining, this is what happened. This was the result. And like Jessica said, I actually liked it so much more than I thought I would. And I found myself wanting to watch episode 2, which I did not do. I had some hot tea and went to bed, but I strangely liked it. And I think I'm going to continue to watch more, but the whole Planet of the Apes thing, I always just stayed as far away from as I could. It creeped me out.
Roddy McDowall, of course, got his break, I suppose, with Elizabeth Taylor in National Velvet, but even in his obituary, probably always known as being the man behind the character of Cornelius in the Planet of the Apes movie, and then, of course, Caesar. And, of course, this was the third ape that he'd actually portrayed, Galen, in the TV series, which was fascinating. Now, again, I recall this was the thing which I'd come to after reading the Marvel Comics book version of the Planet of the Apes movie, and I was watched the TV series, then saw Planet of the Apes, the movie, with Escape from the Planet of the Apes in a double bill at the Odeon Stockton with my parents, which was quite fascinating. But, Jenny, that's a little insight into my kind of historical time travel and fondness for this particular series. What about yourself?
Alex, I might have been in the same cinema on the same day. Who knows?
Was it the Odeon Stockton?
I can't remember that.
Well, there
back.
We are. That was it. It was Odeon Stockton on a Saturday night, sometime in late October 1974.
Could well have been, because we did live in Thornaby at some point in my very young life. Anyway, well, I probably the same for you as the same for Robin, that the Planet of the Apes was part of our popular culture when we grew up. So it was just something that was there. And there was all the movies, which I went to the cinema to see. I never really watched the TV series. My parents were quite strict about what we were allowed to watch on TV. And as you know, making choices, it wasn't what I chose to watch. And like the other guys, I actually really, really enjoyed it. I love Roddy McDowall. I like him in everything he does. Sorry, Pamela. And I love him in this. I love all his little movements, and I just think he's perfect and he really honed the art of being an ape, and he is always known for being an ape. And it was a bit like the Wally that we watched, where it kind of hinted at where our future could go if we didn't look after our planet. And I thought it was interesting to see Mark Leonard playing a completely different kind of I didn't realize that it was him until I heard his voice, and I recognized him immediately from having seen it before. And I thought, wow, it's such a different persona to what he plays in Star Trek. So, yes, I actually really, really enjoyed it very, very much. And I don't really have any criticisms to make. I mean, yeah, there's always flaws, but not really.
Interesting. Booth Coleman, of course, who took on the character of Dr. Zaius, as epitomised by the Shakespearean actor Maurice Evans in the movie. I felt he very much captured that whole feel. Royal Dano as Pharaoh, of course, and some interesting sort of concepts. I always felt sorry for Jonesy, actually. I mean, Jonesy, he's obviously dead when he arrives. He just didn't get any screen time at all. If he hadn't had his eyes open, it would have just been lost on that sort of ways. We've been on a bit of a nostalgia trip for this one, and you could actually say, you mentioned Wally there, Jenny. Of course, once again, Resonance Rewind showing we've got our finger on the cultural zeitgeist, because of course Wally was the Christian name of the oldest astronaut that is now officially qualified by going up in the Jeff Bezos funded Blue Origin rocket yesterday. So Wally is up there. She finally made it after, I think, 50 years of waiting or 60 years of waiting as an astronaut, crossing that particular line. And she's come back in our time as well, which is good. Robin, any particular thoughts that you've got on this one? As I said at the start, I wasn't sure. You've got Don Weiss there, who co-wrote Assignment Earth. You've also got Rod Serling. And of course, you've got the apes pop culture. So where are you sitting on this one?
Well, I had been looking forward to seeing this.
This is not sounding good, Robin.
My kind of apes genesis actually echoes yours very, very closely in terms of timeline, except I didn't see it at a cinema in Stockton with your parents. I saw it in the Palladium in Pacelli, probably by myself. But I watched the opening episode, and I also watched the original 1968 film on the same day. And it struck me how incredibly well it all still works. From the storyline, the plots, you have the brutality of the militia. You have the machinations of the intellectuals who want to suppress the truth, because in the truth, they would lose their power. And it's almost like, you know, sort of religious leaders suppressing truth in order to keep their own positions. Even the makeup worked. And that's actually something that I was a little bit more wary of, because, you know, would it look dated? Because I didn't see these movies for such a long time. But on every single level, it worked. Every single level. The only thing I wish they would have done is they used the same spaceship that they landed on in the lake in Planet of the Apes. Now, it appears to me that they only built the sort of nose cone of it, because it seemed to go back a lot further, because the nose cone is what sort of bobbed up out of the lake as the astronauts were escaping and it was sinking. But in this, of course, they use the nose cone again, and it seems to come just to a very abrupt end. And you think there should be more to it. There's just a heat shield. And I was very conscious of that. But set design, they still had the Ape City standing sets. Everything just worked. It's a fantastic allegory, not only of where we are right now, but in our disdain and offhand treatment of the other species on the planet. I mean, really, who are we to say that we are the dominant species? I think I've said this on a show with you before, and we are only the dominant species on this planet because we say we are. No other species has told us we're dominant, just us. So, yeah, I was really, really impressed with this, and I'll be watching the rest of the series as the days go on, especially if this heat wave continues.
Humans on the High Council, humans are nothing. They've always been nothing, except, of course, for storybooks. Can this be true, Tessa? Is this a case where you think that we could be speciesist, secretly speciesist, unconscious speciousness coming across here?
Secretly speciesist?
I mean, who knows? I just think it's very clever, to see the opposite side of things. It's very entertaining, and yeah, but who knows?
Well, again, it's part and parcel of the whole thing. You mentioned that your father had obviously watched it from that point of view. Was he also an ape fanatic? Has he seen the recent ones? Is he a case of he suddenly sort of realises what a good series this was? It was highly popular in Britain, very popular. But in America, apparently it was up against Sanford and Son and Chico and the Man, and basically collapsed. Basically, after 14 weeks, it was canned because of low ratings.
All right. Okay. I think he might have seen some of the modern day films, and he definitely he saw the film, the older film, the old version in the 1970s. I don't know how many new versions he's seen, but we was talking about this and how it's evolved and changed. But I haven't really watched the new films. I've seen the trailers, and to be honest, I think probably as time has gone on that the costumes are scarier because of CGI and all that. But I personally like the 1974 version. Yeah, definitely. I would actually like to watch some more episodes. I'm sorry if you can hear a phone.
It's probably somebody trying to actually get in touch with various other sort of planetary aspects as well. Probably Rod Serling from beyond. Okay. Jessica, let's return to yourself. I mean, the first time you actually see this, what about the characters of Ron Harper and, of course, James Norton, who played the astronauts Verdon and Burke? How did you feel they sort of connected with the audience?
You know, I feel like I noticed more the... Sorry if there's a lag. But I think I noticed more like the ape characters, like Galen. I think the astronauts... I don't know. I didn't really notice a ton about their characters so far, but I'm sure that changes like as the series goes on and I would get more attached. But I think I was just more fascinated with the ape characters just because it was like, I was aware that they were people, but kind of seeing like the makeup and everything like that and the costumes, I think that that was more interesting, kind of like seeing like the empathetic ones like Galen. But I do think with like the astronauts, you know, they do provide like a stand-in for you to like wonder what you would do if you were there and in this whole situation of like going to this future Earth that apocalyptic depending on what you how you view it. But yeah, I think the astronauts were okay. I'm sure they improve in the series as it goes on.
Well, I mean, interesting. They did a lot of running. I think for a number of times, people thought it was Planet of the Joggers as opposed to Planet of the Apes, but that's a different line. Obviously, they had to keep running because the apes were all on horseback. You did, of course, have the structure, the hierarchical structure between the orangutans, who were very much the kind of administrators, the religious folk, etc., the chimpanzees, who were the curious scientific folk, and, of course, the gorillas, who were effectively the enforcers, which was quite interesting. And no part, of course, in this particular episode, do we have any... female gorillas or orangutans actually shown, which is again quite an interesting one from that. Jenny, as you work through the process, what about characters from yourself? What about, I mean, we'll come to Pamela for music in a few seconds, but what about the way that the 50 minutes or so actually unfolded?
I thought they actually made the animals, the non-human characters. I thought they actually developed the non-human characters more than they developed the characters of the astronauts. I felt the astronauts were a little bit, you sort of had the one that was a little bit more intellectual and the other one who was a bit more of a playboy, sort of, you know, less of a thinker. But I'm sure they the characters, you learn to endear to them and they do develop, but I definitely felt that the characters of the non-humans were far more developed than the characters of the humans. And I thought from the offset they really showed the characters, you know, where you had the and what their the characters and what their sort of agenda was as well, and where some are sympathetic and some are very brutal. And some are scared because they're scared of the humans learning the truth. I was really impressed and I really thought it was excellent. And I thought, well, I can't believe this. I was trying to work out how old I was when it was made, you see. I'm not going to give my age away. And I was thinking, wow, that was made so many years ago and it still looks really great. So, yeah, I thought that.
Allowing for the fact that we travel from August 19th, 1980 to 3085, time is somewhat irrelevant. Pamela, music, of course, produced by Lalo Schifrin, who is known, of course, for Shaft, amongst other things from that point of view. Did you feel that the slightly surreal element, because the original motion picture, of course, Jerry Goldsmith was behind the themes to Planet of the Apes, did you feel that this actually provided you with a good backdrop to the... eerie nature of future Earth?
I feel like it was fine. I feel like growing up in America, if you were a child in the 60s or the 70s or probably their early 80s, now I can see it because I've been studying device and I think a device of the composer would be to psychologically bring you into a certain space. So they're not as much suggesting and surrounding. Like we just watched Dune, and Hans Zimmer does a really beautiful transportative kind of composing. This isn't like that. This is like more like a dragnet, you know, like it tells you how you're going to feel. And it's very male, sorry. It's very strong. And, you know, it's almost like those little moments from members of the orchestra who are reading off of a score that are, you know, you're meant to play this, you're meant to hear this as an audience to have a certain effect of fear or urgency or escape. Or so it's very effective as a tool, as a device, but as a student, as I study this and I go back to that era and I watch it now, it seems very divisive to me. So it's doing its job, but it's kind of it's not inventive necessarily. It's a little
it's episodic good 20th century Fox television.
Yeah,
music.
I mean, I'm not thrilled with it personally, you know, it's but it's fine. It does its job.
Robin, Rod Serling, obviously you're a huge fan, creator of The Twilight Zone and so on. He wrote the original treatment for this particular series. He's uncredited. He had two proposed scripts for the series. Essentially, he focused on the whole notion of two astronauts and one chimpanzee pursued by the ape civilization. Of course, we don't get the reference to "ape shall not kill ape," that if you've seen Battle for the Planet of the Apes, you'll see that 1,000 years later, what's happening to Roddy? Oh, it was an accident. Oh, well, never mind. Galen obviously has killed an ape, but let's carry on. It's like The Fugitive.
Let me backtrack just a little bit. You mentioned earlier on about female gorillas and orangutans. And I can't actually recall ever seeing a female gorilla or orangutan in the series or the films as they
Robin, I'm sorry, but Cornelius and Zira, they gave birth to Caesar in Escape from the Planet of the Apes. Zira,
yes,
and Cornelius.
But I said orangutans and gorillas. They were chimpanzees. They were only the chimpanzees that we ever saw as having you know, the females. The others, I mean, they must have been there, obviously. But and another thing with Lalo Schifrin, really, I mean, you didn't mention his sterling work, no pun intended, on Mission Impossible. Now, this is another really great theme, I thought. Not as tribal as Jerry Goldsmith's theme for the film, but it also juxtaposes. Try that one again. It had a juxtaposition of tribal music and an urgency, which perfectly encapsulates every series, because there's the urgency of being on the run by these primal beings, and you know, it's primal, tribal, and urgent, and I thought it worked rather well. Rod Serling, yes, it was Mr. Serling himself who gave us the possibly one of the most iconic last shots of a film that we have ever seen, and it still stands up today, of the half-buried Statue of Liberty, where they finally find out that they're on Earth. Now, I'd always had in mind that there was a plot hole there, because we had three astronauts and they didn't look up at the night sky and figure, wow, these constellations look familiar, and oh, look, there's the moon, and figure out that they're on Earth. But in the film, Charlton Heston's character does say, you know, it's hot by day, it's overcast at night, what's that glow? We have no idea where we are, nor how, you know, to tell where we are. So that's all taken care of, leaving us for that final surprise, which was really idiotically remade by Tim Burton, where the astronaut lands back on Earth.
Nothing wrong with Abraham Lincoln. It happened. It was an alternate reality. It was a reimagining.
It was what comes out of the rear end of a bull, and you know it. In fact, I watched that film with Steve in the cinema when it first came out. we saw the statue right at the end, and Steve nudged me and said, "Oh, look, it's Abraham Lincoln."
Well, that's part of the mind of the reimagining of Tim Burton. But however, let's beware approaching Alpha Centauri when you run into turbulence and then actually end up who knows where. Tessa, do you have a favourite character that you'd like to share with the team from this particular episode? Which does actually, if you go on to see episode two, there is a tie-in. It's one of the, it's a loose tie-in, but it ties in with what, of course, Alan Burden was spending so much time desperately trying to get out, that little mini CD compact disc. Which also ties in with that. Also, so we see Mark Singer in a very early television role before he went on to appear in V, which shows another epic series we'll be considering somewhere down the line. Anyway, Tessa, your character favourites?
Oh, it's got to, yeah, it's got to be, it's Roddy, isn't it? That's the name of the man who played the gorilla. What was he, a chimpanzee? I connected with him so well. I think he was so sweet. All his little, like Pamela said, his facial expressions, his little nose. And he was just the one to see the other side, you know, that everybody, you know, hopefully can get on at some point. And why can't, you know, everybody be equal? And I really like that. So, and it resonates with today, doesn't it? So, I've got to go with good old Roddy.
Okay, so Galen, the character, Roddy McDowall, as opposed to Jonathan Willoway, his character in Fantastic Journey, which is something else we might be considering at some future point, another short-lived series. It was almost the curse of Roddy McDowall in the 70s. Let's move on to Jenny, your favourite character?
Well, obviously it has to be Roddy McDowall as well.
I'm going to go for Ron Harper because I thought, you know, having moved from Garrison's Gorillas, which was his breakout series in the 1960s, all about prisoner of war activities and behind the scenes enemy actions, etc. Literally a kind of television remake of The Dirty Dozen, Garrison's Gorillas to this. Ron Harper did extremely well. And I think James Norton as Pete Burke was pretty cool as well from that point of view. Pamela, are you sticking with Galen?
Galen, because he's the bridge, he's the hope. You know, as Joe Biden said, I can't believe I'm quoting him, but the only way, like the only way forward is to not be so absolutist, right and wrong, bad guy, good guy. You know, it's really like, well, let's look and study and consider the other. Let's look at history, a historical perspective, and let's see that maybe peace can be made by learning from the past. And maybe it's about working together and being equals. We know it is, because we're all enlightened beings here. But, you know, that's the truth. That's the only way forward. So he represents hope, and he's my favorite.
Jessica, are you going there? Are you throwing somebody like Urko, General Urko, or possibly even Dr. Zaius?
No, I think I'm going to stick with Galen, too. He's just the sympathetic one, and the one that makes you kind of just, I don't know, be able to support both sides. And I think that he's just the sweetest character. So he's definitely my favorite. And yeah, as everyone said, his little facial expressions are so cute, even in that, like, the scary makeup. I don't know.
Robin, are you going down a chimpanzee route or are you going somewhere completely different?
Well, I really do like Roddy McDowall. I like him in most of his films. And again, the facial tics, the little mannerisms that he has, absolutely amazing. But as the series progressed, I grew to actually like the performance that Mark Lennard put in as Urko, because he is the perfect caricature of the military mind. Don't question, just carry out your orders. You know, it doesn't matter what the truth is, your orders tell you to do this. And he will keep on coming at you. Even in a future episode where there's irrefutable evidence that everything he has been told is wrong, he still carries on with his mission. And for an actor like Mark Lennard to go from the super intellectual Sarek, father of Spock, and, you know, an ambassador of Vulcan, to playing a brutish gorilla who has the IQ of a doorknob, and to do it all credibly, I think that is an amazing performance.
You may say that, Robin, but I think it's a little bit harsh. Remember, it's General Urko who effectively recognizes, I can't remember, they were called astronauts. He actually remembers they were astronauts. Well,
remember also in a future episode where they're trying a brainwashing technique, it's Urko who says, "Oh, I've heard of that. It's where you take the brain out of the head and you wash it." So, you know, he's always happy to bluff his way through if he doesn't know.
He's probably just taking a line from the Trump presidency, but let's not go there.
Exactly my point.
Before we head to the final line of this particular episode, it is time for the scores. Tessa, what's your score out of 10 for this particular episode?
I'm going to go with 9 out of 10. I really like this one, so yeah.
Okay, Pamela.
I'm going to go for 9 out of 10 because I have to, as a musician, give it a -1 for the music, but it's really not fair. It was fine of them to do that. I'm just older me looking back going, really? So I give it a 9.
That's fair enough. Jenny?
I'm going to give it 9.5 just for, because it's not perfect, but I really loved it. Yeah. And it is the classic story of intellect over brute force, really, each episode, which is the time-long tradition.
Mm-hmm. Robin?
Well, to me, it was a better commentary on the human condition than Roddenberry did with the Questor tapes.
Or Assignment Earth, also written by Don Weiss. Not directed by Don Weiss, written by Art Wallace.
Basically the raping of Star Trek to launch his next project, and we shall never talk of it again. It had more science in it than the time tunnel ever. So I'm going for a solid, well-earned 9. And actually, I'm a bit disappointed because I thought I was going to be one of the people who scored this the highest. You have all disappointed me. You've stolen my thunder.
Well, Jenny, Jessica's still got to put in her line here. Jessica, what are you going to go for?
I'm going to go lower. I think 8.5. It was very good. And I really, really liked it. I think it was really, really great. The Planet of the Apes isn't something that I am particularly interested in. I think it just creeps me out too bad. But I still really enjoyed this compared to the movies.
And your mum obviously liked it, which is important, even though she's still she's in North Carolina and you're, of course, in Ireland, which is wonderful. I think I'll go for an 8. All things considered, good quality stuff, etc. Overall, probably an 8 from there. I could see sort of some of the flaws. And of course, a final line with, all right then, let's just start walking. Well, they don't. They start running. It becomes a jogging scenario where they're constantly jogging from one thing to the other. They're even jogging the whole thing, even though it is obviously part of Southern California. That's it. Next week, of course, we go into outer space and then back to Earth again. We actually follow through the work of Richard Donner and his incarnation of the Christopher Reeve Superman, the first motion picture that effectively really took superheroes to a whole new field. And it starts off with a little trilogy of our look at super routines here on Resonance Rewind. So keep on resonating. Mm-hmm.